views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're joining us here today, whether you're listening on 1150 AM KKNW here in the Seattle area, on one of the, I don't know how many stations in Australia, on one of the, I think it's 90 different syndicated places, and or on Transformation Talk Radio, or after the fact on ChristineUpchurch.com. But wherever and whenever you're listening from today, I'm so glad you're here, and you're going to be glad that you've joined us, because we are going to be talking about something very important to all of us. And it's, we're going to be talking about love, but we're not going to be talking about the romantic kind of love, so to speak. It's actually the kind of love that transforms our own lives as well as others. But before we talk about our exciting guest today, I want to say hello to my better half here in the studio who does his magic so you can hear these wonderful conversations, Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
Good morning. Did you mention love?
It floats back to you.
Oh, maybe not that one.
Actually, I loved that show when I was a kid.
Glad I could float the boat, so to speak.
I'm giving away my age, though, aren't I?
No, yes. I liked watching it, too. I'm a little bit on the younger side.
You are a wee bit twisted, aren't you?
Well, you know what it is.
Yeah. You know, our guest today is Scott Stabile, and he is an amazing individual. I mean, first of all, he comes from what many would consider to be a very tragic past. The kind of past, and we'll talk about it, that the kind of past that many people don't get over. Many people will go into drugs or, you know, commit suicide or something like that. But somehow he's come out the other side to offer us a very important message at this transformational time in our world. Scott, he is an author of this book called Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. And he has a gazillion Facebook followers. I think it's like 360,000 at this point. And he offers regular videos and inspirational messages, but not the kind of like sappy, I'm being spiritual messages, but rather ones that we can all relate to, that that do involve not just the positive, but the challenging aspects of our lives. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. And he lives in Michigan. Apparently, it's snowing there. And he conducts personal empowerment workshops around the world. I'm so grateful to have him here today, Scott Stabile. Scott, thank you for joining us here today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Christine. I'm excited to be here.
You know, I think that when I heard about your past and I heard about what you're doing now, I've thought, my goodness, he's got to be like a master ascending or something to get through it. Can you please share with our listeners?
Not quite. What, yeah. Far from it, I would say. Yeah. But thank you.
Well, no, and you're quite real. But the thing is, you've had a tragic past. Can you please share with our listeners a little bit of what you have gotten through and had to face as a child as well as an adult, and how you got to the other side of it?
Sure. Well, I mean, when I was 14, my parents were shot to death in their market, their fruit market that they owned in Detroit. Yeah. That is certainly the heaviest of anything, you know, that I've been through in my life. And, you know, at the time, it's I understand asking how I got through it. Absolutely. Because that's a natural question to ask. And I think at the time, at that age, there was something in me knew to just bury the experience as much as I probably could. I don't take ownership of any conscious decisions when I was a 14-year-old after losing my parents in that way, you know, but I feel really grateful that I, you know, had some instincts around like, this is potentially too big and too painful and too overwhelming for me to deal with in terms of like really allowing for the sadness and really allowing for the rage and the confusion that comes with enduring an experience like that. Yeah. And so, you know, in those years, in my teenage years, I, you know, had a good cry once a year. It was like clockwork. And then I would bury it again and just go on. You know, I was a really good student, had lots of friends, and I created a really big secret around the fact that I was an orphan. You know, I transferred schools because I had to move in with my eldest sister and her family after my parents died. And so I was in a new school and nobody knew my story. And I didn't want anybody to know my story. I put so much energy into preventing people from finding out, one, that I was an orphan, and even worse, that my parents were murdered, because I grew up in suburban Detroit, and that was, most of my friends had parents, you know, their parents were alive. And then it was one thing not to have parents, and it was a completely different thing to say they were murdered. And people didn't at all know how to receive that information. You know, even now, I mean, this is 32 years ago, and people, I'm 46 now, people don't know how to receive the information. It's heavy. It's heavy. So, you know, at the time, the last thing I wanted to be was kind of an outcast and feel like a freak and be pitied. And, you know, I put a lot of energy into manipulating conversations away from any dialogue that could potentially lead to family. You know, I was always a few beats ahead and would change subjects. And eventually, I mean, so that's a lot of, oh, go ahead, please.
So you were an intelligent survivor.
I was in it. Yeah, sure. That's a, I would say that's a way to put it. And look at, I recognize fully that I could have gone down the path of just raging at life and God and getting heavily into drinking and drugs and all of that stuff. And I'm super grateful, obviously, that that isn't the direction I took. I just can't say with honesty that I was like making these conscious choices, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and you're a kid, you're just kind of surviving. And
thank goodness for the survival mechanisms of the, I don't know if it's in the subconscious. I don't know what psychologists would say, but there is something that we sort of automatically do when we are not equipped to handle something, we don't face it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so that was my response for years. And I would say that my approach to grieving my parents changed profoundly in my early 20s when I graduated college and moved to San Francisco. And I started to awaken more to just to the idea, you know, I got a job at a New Age gift shop, and they had this wonderful book section and all these books talking about enlightenment and love and compassion and all these ideas that I'd never really played with or explored, not in any sort of conscious way. And I was working alongside people who were talking about love and enlightenment as their goals in life. And I'm like, what's enlightenment? What are you even talking about? You know, this was a new idea to me, but then these concepts and these ideas that love as your focus in life, as the guiding force in your life, it made total sense to me. It felt like coming home to philosophies that I was rooted in, even though I'd never given time or energy to them. And that was when I realized that all of the secret I had created around losing my parents and being an orphan and the wall I had put up to really feeling the sadness and the rage had also, I'd created walls to connections with people.
You bet.
You know, and that's how it works. You know, we like to think we can be selective when we're putting up these walls.
Right.
But the reality is a wall is a wall. If you're keeping out the darkness, I can assure you, you're also keeping out the light.
Yeah.
You know, in my experience.
Right. And I think of it, I think of it in terms of the heart, and the heart is kind of like, it's got this engine, right? And if we suppress, if we have those walls, as you say, it's kind of like having clogged spark plugs in a car, and you can't you can't speed up, you can't get the power that you need because you've got those blockages there, and they have to be faced and allowed and cleared, at least whatever clearing that can happen, in order to have that energy move through.
That's a beautiful way to put it. I think that that's spot on. And it makes a profound difference when we, so in my 20s, I'm like, okay, it's time to grieve differently. Uh-huh. It's time to grieve, and it's time to cry more than once a year and to be angry. And, I was reading books that were helping. I was having, deep friendships with new people in my life. And that was helping. I was writing in my journal a lot. And really, I was just making myself available to feel. And I've learned in my life how important that is and how much we as the universal collective, because I think it applies to most of us, how much we run from simply being present with the more uncomfortable feelings. And I think, and it's why we see so much addiction in the world, whether it's to drugs or alcohol or social media or shopping or whatever it is, we're numbing and escaping anytime we are called to feel uncomfortable instead of just feeling uncomfortable and feeling the sadness and feeling the anger, whatever it is, and recognizing like, hey, I can sit in these emotions and I will survive it. Mm-hmm. And when I reflect back, I think there was some part of me that didn't think I would survive the pain of losing my parents, like to really feel it and really feel that sadness, and the only way you can survive it is when you do. Like that's how we learn that we're stronger and more resilient than we believe ourselves to be. It's by allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable, to be in the discomfort.
Right.
It's part of life.
It is. We have to go to a quick break, but when we return, Scott, I'm going to want you to share a little bit more about some of the bumps in the road and how you went from these tragedies that you had to process to being a teacher in this world. More with Scott Stabile here in just a few moments. Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a 4-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. how many of your healthy habits are really based on fear. Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
You know that feeling in your gut? That tiny whisper in the back of your ear? The tinge behind your knee that says, let's go for it. But then your mind says, that's ridiculous. Do you ever wonder if that little voice might be onto something? My name is Audrey Michelle. I'm the host of Rewired Life Radio, as well as a spiritual growth coach. If you're ready to stop letting fear lead you around, let's talk. If you're at the point in your life where you're ready to shed layers of what you thought you were supposed to be and are ready to take the next step to trust your best resource, let's talk. I can help you discover the voice of inner wisdom. I will guide you through a process to unearth your best self. To learn more, go to audreymichelle.com/coaching. That's Audrey Michelle, spelled michelle.com/coaching.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. Okay, Scott. So you talked about the pain that you were experiencing as a 20-something, finally beginning to process your parents' murder. But your tragedy didn't end there, did it?
Well, no. I mean, then when I was 24, my brother died. He had been struggling with a heroin addiction in his entire adult life, and he was 18 years my senior. So his addiction was my whole life, really. You know, I only knew him through the lens of his addiction. And I, you know, the experience of his death was a very different experience. I mean, it was obviously sad and painful, but also not unexpected. It wasn't, I think I can safely speak for my siblings in saying all of us thought one day we were going to get the call about my brother, Ricky. You know, he'd been struggling for over 20 years with heroin, and was in and out of rehabs and in and out of jail and, you know, just living on the streets, and he couldn't kick it. You know, he just couldn't. So I, when I got the call from my sister, the experience of that was almost at the time, a sense of relief, you know, a sense that, because at the time I also had a different sense around addiction and how I viewed it. And I really believed that my brother was never going to be able to overcome his addiction. I didn't think it was possible. Yeah. I thought it was too strong for him. And I don't believe that anymore I think I always believe there's hope to overcome anything if you're alive and breathing. You know, but so I felt like, you know what, he's at peace now, you know, like no more living on the streets and no more being in jail and all of these things. So it was different. And in some ways I felt more connected to my brother after his death, because I lived with a lot of resentment toward him and anger, because I grew up with a lot of, you know, pain. You know, when you grow up around addiction, and my father was a gambling addict, and there was a lot of addiction in our household and a lot of trauma and pain created because of it. So I couldn't accept for a lot of my childhood that Ricky couldn't just not use heroin. You know, I couldn't make sense of it. I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Why is he choosing this? Why is he choosing to bring this much misery and pain on our family? You know, not, you know, and I think in my 20s and after his death, I came to, you know, view things very differently. And I found a lot more compassion for my brother and for his experience and, and his reality. And,
Just since we're talking about addiction, I know that you've got more to the story, but I've heard that addiction relates to feeling lack of connection. What's your perspective on it?
I believe that that is, well, look, I can't pretend to know all the reasons that every single individual out there finds themselves addicted to something, but I believe that lack of connection is a big component for a lot of people. You know, I think that, it comes back to a little bit of what I was saying earlier when I view addiction, because I really, Christine, honestly, I believe there are those of us who are clearly in their addiction to something, but I think for the rest of us, we're riding the line. When I look around at this world, and when I look at my own experience and my own self and the times in which I'm like, don't want to feel right now, so I'm just going to numb myself and watch 10 hours of Netflix shows. Uh-huh. Like that
it's easy to do.
Of addiction. You know what I mean? That's
yes.
The energy of addiction. It's all about escaping whatever reality we're living in, the unaddicted state. And I feel like connection and feeling connection to people and really finding meaning in our lives, however we go about doing that, is one of the ways in which we can steer ourselves away from addiction. You know, I don't see, I was misquoted recently in this interview as saying, you know, Stabile believes addiction is a choice. And I absolutely don't believe addiction is a choice, because who would choose it? Do you know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
it's a horrible reality. But I do believe sobriety is a choice.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that because sobriety is a choice, there's always the possibility to move beyond your addiction, no matter what it is. And I think in my experience, what I found is when I'm working on myself, when I'm creating more meaning in my life, when I'm putting more energy and time into doing the things that stand to bring me more joy and more peace of mind, I found I'm less inclined to need to escape the life that I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like, oh, please go ahead.
So do you think that people get addicted to their pain, they get addicted to their stagnation? I mean, certainly addiction goes beyond the binge watching of television or, you know, alcohol or drugs.
I think we can get addicted to anything. Yeah, I think that we can get addicted to our story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story.
Oh, yes.
The story we tell ourselves that prevents us from moving forward in a positive way in our lives.
Right.
Absolutely. I think that because, I mean, as counterintuitive as it seems, it's even our pain becomes comfortable when it's what we know.
Yes.
And people, so many of us tend to be so afraid of the unknown or so afraid of change that even if making a change that will most certainly serve us positively, like moving on from abusive relationships and, you know, terrible jobs, and knowing that moving on from those things will absolutely serve us positively, and we still choose not to because of all the fears of, you know, unknown that come with it. And I think that, you know, there's comfort in our discomfort sometimes, just because it's what we know.
Right, right. And we get addicted to what we know, the familiar.
But my experience around that is that, you know, is the path of self-exploration and really, really asking yourself those tough questions, like what is true for me outside of how I've been conditioned, outside of how my tribe, my religion, my friends, my family think, is this real for me? And when you start to ask yourself those questions and you start to, you know, dig a bit deeper into what's real for you and you make space for really honest answers, it's tough. Because what I found with self-exploration is that there's this beautiful part where you realize you're more beautiful than you ever knew, and life is more beautiful than you ever could have imagined. And at the same time, you are more disgusting than you ever knew. Like when you're really honest, it's like when you dig into those parts that are, you're envious of your best friend for getting a promotion at work, and that feels so horrible. But that's humanity. That's human beings. That's the human mind. And it's like, but we like to shut down because we don't want to face our ugliness. I found a lot of us, we don't want to be honest with the ugliness that we're bringing to the table. So instead we point fingers and we blame or we escape and numb. And we do all these things that are not rooted in any sense of awareness.
Yeah. And the shadow side, integrating the shadow side is such an important part of learning to love ourselves as well as loving others.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's critical, I think, to creating a life of deeper meaning and deeper connection with people, and connection that is rooted in something that feels more real
So
and more.
You mentioned before asking ourselves the question, is this real? Why is that an important question to ask?
Well, I think that I think truth is important. You know, I've found in my life that when I am acting in accordance with my truth, I feel better about everything. You know, when I'm not trying to fit into to conditioning that's been placed on me or to some box that's been fitted for me.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? When I'm actually just operating in the world from this authentic, honest place. There's no saying what types of possibilities we create in our lives when we do that. And also just how we feel inside. Like I don't think we can really know on an energetic level, both emotionally and physically, how much we're hurting ourselves by living in falseness, by playing to other people's expectations of who we're supposed to be rather than just honoring who we really are. That takes a toll.
And you know, we end up getting much better glimpses of that when we end up, you know, working our way into illness or, you know, a dysfunctional relationship gets to be more explosive, more abusive. I mean, it's kind of like we tend to not want to look at that until it gets to the extreme symptom.
Absolutely. And those things they're not just occurring by happenstance.
Right?
There are reasons for it. We are playing a role in the creation of everything going on in our lives, you know?
And I know a lot of people like to stay in the victim mentality, and it actually can feel better because then we don't have to take responsibility. But why is it empowering to take responsibility?
My gosh, because then you know that you control the reins to your life in so many different areas that you didn't allow for. It's when you're living as a victim, then you're basically living with blame. Uh-huh. And when you're living with blame, then you're living in the past, because the only thing you would be blaming is what's happened to you in the past and who's done things to you in the past. When you're rooted in the present, there's no space for blame. That's not how the present works. But when we realize that we are responsible for the lives we're living, when I realized that in a much deeper way, when it really clicked in me, like I'm responsible for my life, it was this really empowering moment. It's like, oh my God, I'm responsible for my life.
Uh-huh.
I have power in the life that I'm creating. I have power in the choices I'm making, and they matter, you know? And so moving forward, I can make choices that I know are going to serve my happiness and well-being in a different way. And I can stop making choices that feel toxic and feel like they're depleting me rather than supporting me. And that's a powerful realization.
Yeah, it is. And I think that part of that we have to accept the fact that we need to take responsibility for the toxic relationship or the dis-ease that we're in, not that it's our fault per se, but it's kind of like we've played a role. And that piece of it, I think people have a hard time with. Not that we should be blaming others when they're sick or abused or whatever, but it's like if we have the power to change, then somehow we have not been living in that power and we have accepted less for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think by doing that, we're discounting the reality that people do really crappy things to people.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
That all of us have been on the receiving end of probably horrible behavior. We have all been the victim of somebody's bad behavior.
Uh-huh.
You know, that can be true. And also what you were saying, the recognition that, okay, if I'm in this relationship that feels really toxic and negative and depletes me, and I'm putting all of that on the person because they're really mean and they're jerks and they're disrespectful, the question I would ask now in my life is like, not why are they doing all of those things, but why am I staying in a relationship that depletes rather than supports me?
Absolutely. Okay, we've got to go to another quick break, but when we return, more about Big Love with Scott Stabile.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelmed and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath. to signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is, sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice, full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a 4-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836. Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com. Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. If you're just tuning in now, I am talking to the author of Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. Not always easy to do, but he's got some great lessons for us in this book, and his name is Scott Stabile. Scott, I'm really enjoying this conversation, and I'm fascinated by how you went from tragedy to really allowing your feelings to be heard, allowing them to be seen, and moving through them to get to this place to want to teach about love. First of all, I'd love for you to define what love is.
What love is.
Yeah.
I want to know what love is.
There we go. Yes.
Well, when I speak about love, I'm speaking about what I see as the energy that informs all good choices in the world, like kindness and compassion and forgiveness. I see those things as love in action. So I see love as an energy like this, basically the underlying vibration. When you get beyond all the noise, when you get beyond all the insanity and all the excuses to be mean and blameful and all those other things,
right,
you know, you beneath all of that is love. You know, it's, and I see, and I think that the thing about love for me is that that's so silly and drives me nuts sometimes, is that we all know how it feels to be loving, and we all know how it feels to be on the receiving end of loving energy, you know, and I think that most of us experience love as the most powerful thing there is in the world, yes, in a lot of ways, yeah, in the way we feel the best. And that's why it's so crazy to me that so many of us are in resistance to love, or that when we see love as a weak choice, when I actually think love almost always is the harder choice we can make. You know, it's very easy to go to blame. It's mm-hmm. very easy to go to rage. It's very easy to go to disgust and all these other things. Our minds are masters of those emotions. But actually taking the time when someone's in your face yelling at you for something, taking the time to be present and to respond from love, that takes serious dedication, yeah, and hard work.
It does. And in the bigger situation, I mean, in a situation like, okay, you're arguing with your partner and it's very clear, you know, it's a loving relationship and you're having a disagreement and it gets a little bit out of hand and you're not being nice to each other. It's easier for us, I think, sometimes to come back to some compassion in that situation. But what about in extreme cases, for instance, the person who murdered your parents?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, that was, I certainly didn't go to love right away.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I'll tell you, when I think about, when I reflect on the gifts that came from having to go through that experience, one of the biggest gifts was seeing that I could approach a situation that most people deem unforgivable, his actions,
yep,
and find the path to forgiveness. And when I reflect on it, it was in a word, it was empathy. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was when I started taking the time, and this didn't happen again really until my early to mid 20s, when I started taking the time to not just think about the man who murdered my parents, but actually to consider his experience, mm-hmm, what might his life experience and life struggle have looked like? You know, when I took the time to recognize that people who are operating from self-love and self-worth would never make the choice to kill another human being.
Sure.
So I could connect to what I imagined that he was feeling in that, without knowing his story, obviously, but recognizing he must have been feeling, you know, self-loathing. He must have felt unseen by the world. He must, uh-huh, have been struggling profoundly. And though I can't relate to murdering someone, I certainly know what it means to feel, or to feel unloved, uh-huh, and to feel unworthy, right, and to be so angry at people for what they're doing out there in the world that I wish they would just die. You know, these, sure, are all human things that we can all relate to. And it was like, I never just declared, I forgive him, and then suddenly was struck by forgiveness. But what I realized is that when I continued to find empathy for him and bring to that compassion, when I would think about him, it was like forgiveness suddenly discovered me. And I realized that I'm thinking about him through the lens of love. I'm thinking about him through forgiveness. And really when that shifted, it's never shifted back. Mm-hmm. It's like, I do forgive him. I do have love for him, because I feel like when we connect to each other's humanity, it's really hard to hate one another. And we're living at a place in our country that yes, we're all talking about all the division out there and all the rage and anger. And yes, it is real. And when someone's posting something on Facebook that really angers you or disgusts you or offends you, mm-hmm, can we take the time, if we're choosing to respond, can we take the time to imagine, well, what might it be like to experience life in their shoes?
Right.
You know, what might their life look like? And I found that when I take the time to do that, it's almost impossible to show up to the conversation with hatred in my heart. Mm-hmm. So at the very least, if I'm choosing to respond, I'm going to respond with some empathy and some compassion, even if I don't condone anything they're saying,
sure,
you know, or support any of it. I can still show empathy. And if I can't, what love, you know, I ask myself the question all the time, what is love inviting me to do in this moment? You know, what is love calling on me to do? And so sometimes the answer to that is disengage. You know, you have nothing to offer but your own vitriol right now and your own rage.
Uh-huh.
And it is not going to serve this moment in any way that moves the moment forward positively, mm-hmm, you know, and that's, knowing that and just putting, you know, not typing in something or not saying the things that are going to hurt the other people, that's powerful in and of itself,
mm-hmm,
you know, just stepping away, because we don't have to engage in everything that we're invited to.
Right. But, okay. So if we come from a place of love, does it mean that we should just be focusing on that energy and those interactions, or Is it appropriate sometimes to be setting boundaries and taking action towards change? I mean, I think about the political situation in our country, and there are so many people who are outraged about the situation. If we're coming from a place of love and compassion, can we still say, no, this is not appropriate, and this is where boundaries need to be set?
Well, for me, 100%. You know, the thing that I've this last year has really pushed me, I think it's pushed a lot of us really, you know, reflect on who we are and what we stand for, and the spiritual seekers among us and the people who are talking about love. I think it's pushed us to like, what does love mean in the face of all of this injustice that we're seeing? And for me, I feel like love is very noisy in the face of injustice. I don't think it's silent. I know that there are those out there and who are like, well, I don't want to lower my vibration by, you know, engaging. And I'm even saying it in kind of a condescending tone, which isn't very loving, but I find that that's not real.
Yeah.
It, for me, that's nonsense. That's just a way to avoid doing the hard work of showing up with empathy and compassion, but also speaking up, you know, in the face of injustice and speaking for people who are being marginalized and who are being hurt by this government and these policies and all of this craziness that's happening in the world. I think love makes a lot of noise in the face of that, you know, and I think that how to do it, you know, Marianne Williamson is someone I really admire in great part because she, you know, she's a very loving, deep, wise human being, but she is so unafraid to enter the political arena.
Yes.
And she does it, in my opinion, in such a clear and graceful way because she's not afraid to call out all of this craziness for what it is and call out the hatred and call out, you know, the injustice clearly, but she still brings with it the notion that only through love are we ultimately going to heal what's going on. But we've got to be willing to acknowledge it. If you don't acknowledge it, you can't heal a thing.
And one of the things I've found myself doing, first of all, I used to stay away from the news unless there was some major, major event. And this year I found myself drawn to become better informed. And it's not that I didn't get informed and vote, but I've just been drawn into learning more about the details of what's getting illuminated and in multiple ways. And so I have to catch myself sometimes when I'm feeling reactive, like, oh, I'd like to see that person, you know, behind bars or whatever. And there's a difference between saying that person deserves to be behind bars because here's the boundary and that person should be behind bars. It's like, how can, it's kind of like a parent of a young child, when they do something bad or do something with behavior that's not appropriate, do you shame them about it or you just say, nope, and here are the consequences? A loving parent would just draw the line and give them the consequences. And I have to teach myself over and over again not to come from a place of shaming and hatred and retribution.
I hear you. And also recognize, like, look, it's totally natural and human. And we're all working hard on that. But I'm so with you. It's like, you know, wanting, there's a difference in wanting our president to suffer and just wanting justice to be served.
I
hear you completely. Uh-huh. And I think but you know what? That's the work. That's what
is.
I see is the hard work. And I think there's no more valuable work to do in this world. You know, it's because love is what creates the most powerful change. So the more of us who are focusing on that, and you spoke to boundaries earlier, and I think boundaries for me are one of the clearest reflections of self-love that we can offer ourselves and the world. You know, I think that it is such a sign of respect to who I am and to the people in my life when I'm clear about what works for me and doesn't work for me.
Yes.
Because I don't, in my experience, there are some who are going to want to step on your toes and cross your boundaries no matter what, but most of us don't want to be trampling over each other's boundaries. We just don't know what the boundaries are.
Right. And it's interesting because Brené Brown's research indicates that the most compassionate people are also the most boundaried.
Yes. It makes total sense. Yeah. It makes total sense.
We've got to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more with Scott Stabile.
Thank you.
Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years, and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a four-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show. We're having way too much fun on this show today.
Oh, yeah,
Betty.
the roller
and all the
days,
applause
right?
around yeah. the world yeah. right now is for Benny Mathers.
I'll just give it to myself. Thank,
yes.
You.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for being here today. And you know, before we go any further, Scott, I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to share with our listeners how they can connect with you.
Sure. Thank you. Well, find me on Facebook if you want to find me. That's where I do most of my posting, and I do a lot of live videos on Facebook pretty regularly. And those are always really fun because wherever you are in the world, you can tune in real time. And I love doing those. And, you know, the book's in stores and you know, online at all the usual spots. Okay. And you can come to my website too if you want. It's just scottstabile.com.
Yeah. And that's ScottStabile.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful book. And I love your messages on Facebook as well. And you have many, many followers for good reason. So,
thank you so much.
Okay. So, how do we make this choice to step into love?
I think there are opportunities from the moment we wake up till the moment we go to sleep. You know, like I say in the book that, you know, we can all be love spreaders if we just choose to be. And, and I think, like, for instance, when you're going into the bathroom in the morning and you're turning on the light and you're looking in the mirror. And I think for a lot of us, there's a very natural dialogue that happens when we're in front of mirrors. And it's not, it's not a very friendly one. You know, you're too, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too hairy, you're too this, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The moment we can bring awareness to that internal self-abusive dialogue and shift it. And shift that conversation and say some loving things to ourselves. That is practicing love. That's love in action. That's self-love in action, you know, which is as important as any other kind. When we're out in the streets, when we're interacting with our community, when we're in stores with the checkout clerks, are we bringing kindness as often as possible to each of those interactions? Because every time we show up with kindness, we're bringing love in action. You know, are we looking at forgiveness? Are we working on compassion? Are we looking at those places and those moments in our lives when we're not acting authentically? And are we doing our best to bring authenticity to our lives? Because authenticity is nothing more than self-love. Because when we're feeling self-love, we feel like we feel okay being who we are in the world for real.
Okay, now I want you to repeat that phrase again, that sentence, because this is really important. Tell me again what authenticity is.
For me, authenticity is nothing more than a reflection of self-love, because when I am feeling at peace and at love with myself, I feel free to be who I am. So the more authentic we are, the more loving of ourselves we are. That's my experience of it. You know, when we're hating ourselves, we tend to, you know, we cower. We don't show who we really are because we're not accepting it because of shame and all these other reasons.
Of course.
But when we're loving ourselves and we're embracing who we are and we're showing up authentically, that is like the grandest expression of self-love, you know, and all of these, and none of this is easy, by the way. I think kindness is pretty easy for a lot of, you know, like kindness of love's different mandates. I think that's the easiest one.
Right.
But these other things take work. You know, it takes, and when I speak about work, I'm talking about, you know, awareness, recognizing when you're showing up false, recognizing when you're nodding and agreeing with things that aren't really true for you. And you know what I mean? Instead of being present in your truth, and the more awareness we can bring and follow up that awareness with action and making different choices that serve our well-being, that serve our truth, you know, the more we stand to create incredibly positive changes in our lives. That's been my experience.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I speak from my experience, but I also speak from watching other people in the world and, and seeing, you know, the paths of friends of mine and, It's pretty consistent, you know, and I believe that for me it all starts with love.
So in situations where somebody's being unkind to us, whether they're cutting us off on the freeway or speaking harshly to us or being impatient, how do we not take it personally?
Oh, I think we do. You know, and I think I'm aware that it's not personal, and I still take everything personally. And I'm like, you know what, that's part of being human. It's like when we get rejected, we take it personally, even though I know that when someone's rejecting me, that's speaking about their needs and what they want more than about me. When someone's yelling at me or criticizing me, you know, we can never own another person's response to who we are.
And the question becomes, if we're taking it personally, are we loving ourselves enough?
For me, it's just like, I guess it's that I've become more okay with the human things of like, okay, I take things personally. Okay, I'm afraid of being judged. Okay, I'm afraid of this and that. But is it preventing me from showing up in my life as courageously and as authentically as I want to? And if that's the case, then there's some really deep digging to do. But if it's not, it's like, hey, I'm just a human with a human mind. And this is, you know, I'm not an enlightened master who's transcended my ego and who doesn't give a crap about anything going on in the world. That's not my reality. My reality is my feelings get hurt. You know, I have expectations. I have, you know, all of these things that we all have. And I'm still showing up to my life in this very brave, loving way. And I'm going to continue to do that and hope, trust. And if not, that's okay too, that as I continue to show up this way, maybe I won't take things as personally down the line, or maybe I will. And that's okay. That's just who I am. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't think it has to mean that I don't love myself enough. I love myself a lot, and I still, if someone criticizes me, I still feel really hurt and rejected by it.
Yeah.
You know?
This show has just flown by today, Scott. I want to thank you for joining us here today. And again, the website is Scott Stabile, ScottStabile.com. And the book is called Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. Thank you so much, Scott, for joining us here today.
Thank you so much, Christine. And thank you, Benny.
And if you want to hear this show again or share the archive with somebody, please go to ChristineUpchurch.com. Plus, folks, we've got something new that's coming up on the website. I'm starting to do some video podcasts with some VIPs. Just recently did one with Lynn McTaggart that's coming up on the website probably by this weekend. Thank you for joining us here today, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.